start today the Thoroughway, Northwest London, in conjunction with Hinadas Yisrael Congregation. Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Teves, 1st of Teves, 25th of December, Rabbi Shlomi Yitzchok Bixenspanner, Shlita, Napoleon and the Yidden, an in-depth analysis, introduction.
First of all, I would like to wish everyone a Freilich Hanukkah, a good Chodesh. It's so nice to see Yidden coming together to learn Torah on a day that there's no work. And today we're going to expand a bit on the topic of Napoleon and the Yidden. Napoleon plays a very interesting role in people's imagination. For many generations, people were very intrigued by Napoleon. And sometimes people may not realize how short he played the role in world history. He was there barely 20, 25 years, and then he was gone in a way that mamash lo noida. Not only that, the Oile may know about this, that even in France, where he was an emperor there for a while, and they're sort of still a bit proud of his accomplishment and his achievements, but nevertheless, there is a big controversy today whether you can gratify him, you can celebrate his life, or whether not, because there were a lot of shady things that he did which don't conform with today's day and age, one of them being bringing back slavery. As we know, the main thing that Napoleon is known for, at least in France, is for the French Revolution. The French Revolution, which happened in 1789, where people decided enough is enough. They don't want to be governed by the landowners and the simple folk, the peasants. They couldn't handle anymore the fact that they were sort of subjects of the hierarchy and of the high society, and they wanted to equalize, that everyone should have equal rights, and that is sort of what started the French Revolution. And then he was involved in that, and then later they went out to wage wars, which is one of the reasons why some people are very not happy with his legacy, because they call him a warmonger. Because all he did was he went this country and that country and was waging war, all kinds of wars. And the truth is, even for from our perspective, today we're going to focus more on the chelik, the Torah chelik and the Musar chelik, what we can learn from this whole saga and what it is that we can sort of, in a nutshell, what are the lessons that are learned from Napoleon and his life. So Lemaise, he was never happy, was never enough. If he would have stayed in France and he would have focused on building up France from within, he could have, you know, been alive much longer. He could have accomplished much more. In the end, he was exiled and he died a broken man. So this is a major lesson for us as well, that sometimes people are greedy, people aren't happy. People aren't happy with what they have. They want more, they go out, they try. And it doesn't always work. And not only doesn't it work, sometimes it backfires. And that's what happened with Napoleon. Now, we can't just have such a shiur without mentioning a bit the English connection to Napoleon. England were one of his major rivalries. And there was a lot of fighting that went on with between England and France at that time. And England actually conquered him. They were successful more than once. There's the famous Battle of Trafalgar, where there was the fleet, it was in the water. There was the Spanish fleet and the French fleet against the English fleet. And there was an admiral by the name of Nelson that he conquered. He basically died. He was killed by that battle. But nevertheless, they attribute the success the victory in that war, they attribute to this Nelson. That was in 1805. And then 10 years later, in 1815, that is when, again, a different British general, the Duke of Wellington, he conquered, he was considered the one that conquered, that won the war against Napoleon in Waterloo, which is not only a station in the underground, it's a city in, today it's in Belgium. At that time it was part of the United Kingdom, of the Netherlands, and that's when, that was sort of the beginning of the end. From there, they exiled him to St. Helena, which is an island somewhere in the South Atlantic, which is very far from everything. It's a small little island. There are people still living there today, about 4,000 and change, 4,500 people living there. Not much going on. And that's where he died after a short time. He didn't live long. And that is sort of the end of the Napoleon era. And as I said, 2 years ago, there was the 200th anniversary of the death of Napoleon. And in France, there was a very big divide between the people. Can we celebrate it? Can we not? And the Prime Minister, Macron, he very, very politically wove his way in and out. So basically, he sort of didn't celebrate the person. He just celebrated the triumphs and so on. And anyone that has been to Paris, there's the Arc de Triomphe, where supposedly he marched through when he became the emperor. So they still are very, very quietly, they're still proud of Napoleon. But Lemaisa, they won't admit it, they will admit it. Just to mention something very interesting, that there's a famous pastry. I think that the only thing today that we know about Napoleon is if you walk into Parkway Patisserie and you ask them for a Napoleon, they'll give you some kind of a pastry that's, a bunch of cream, custard, whatever. And in France, they don't even call it a Napoleon. Maybe they'll know what it is, but it has a different name. It's called millefeuille, which means it has 1,000 pieces of paper because it's a small... Whatever, it's made with flaky dough and crumbs or whatever. But that's more or less, to synopsize the whole, in a nutshell, what do we know about Napoleon? He's in the bakeries, and that's what the geblieben für den ganzen Sach. And that also is a tremendous Musa Haskell. You have a person that, thinks he's so powerful, and he thinks he has so much koyach and so much influence, and all that's left is a shtickel gebäcks in the bakery. But basically, as I said, we can talk history and all kinds of different dates that happened, mitzad, the Goyshe history, which is that's not the point of our shir. What we want to try to focus more is on the chelik that has to do with Yidden and the chelik that has to do with Torah. So we produced a booklet which was kindly sponsored by Mr. Lou, Lila Nishma, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi, Ben Arab, Rabbi Israel Yosef. And in that booklet, we bring many different sources that you can have a sefer this thick. There's so many things that you have about Napoleon. But in the 45 minutes that we have, to give a shtickel a background, one of the main things that Napoleon is famous for, mitzat the Yidden, is the Sanhedrin that he created. Now, we will try to explain it after the Olam learns a bit and goes through the Mar Mekoymus. It's not very clear whether Napoleon was an Oyev Yisrael or a Soyne Yisrael. There are many that claim that he was a tremendous Soyne Yisrael, but he was clever. And he tried to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish in a way that no one ever tried before. He wasn't Matzliach either. But the point is that he understood that he needs to have the Yidden on board, and the way he thought that he will be able to have the Yidden on board is by creating a body which he called the Sanhedrin, which was modeled on the Sanhedrin of the Ein Aleph, the 71 Sanhedrin that we had in the Beis HaMikdosh in Yerushalayim. And he basically created such a body, and the Rabbanim there, most of them were... what they say, they barely knew how to read. In other words, they weren't big Tanakamas. And But luckily, the Rosh of the Sanhedrin was someone that was a Rav in France. He was a Rav in Marseille. And his name was Rabbi Yosef David Zinsheim. And he made a Sefer Yad David and many other Svarim. And the Gedoyle Yisrael, Mamash, spoke about him in very, very, very high terms. That he was a Godel, he was a Talmud Chacham, he was a Reish Shamayim. And he was very careful how he navigated the Sanhedrin. Because as we will see, I Baruch Hashem, at Siyata Dishmaya, I found in one of the koftsim that they give out, where they find all kinds of kizviyodas and all kinds of things, someone found the 12 questions. There were 12 questions that were posed by the Sanhedrin, that they were supposed to go through and give a ruling on. Now, those questions are very, very sensitive. Those questions are very, very touchy. And even today, these questions, push buttons, different buttons by different people. But it's something which is very, very, things that you can't really speak about in regular terms. You have to be very diplomatic when you go about answering these 12 questions. So I put in all the 12 questions and the answers that they wrote. It took them a long, long time until they came out with the Psakim. And the Sanhedrin, supposedly, they only sat for 8 times. They had 8 sittings, and then it just disappeared. And the only thing that came out of the Sanhedrin, which was longer lasting, was the concept of the consistoire. Anyone that's a bit familiar with the history knows what's the consistoire. The consistoire was a body in France that they sort of were in charge of religion. And in a way, they took away the koyach of the rabbonim, the koyach that a rav has over his kehillah, the paskin, and they made it into a government capacity called the consistoire, and the psakim came from the consistoire. Now, the consistoire weren't big tzaddikim. I put in a tshuva in Chasam Sofer, where the Chasam Sofer writes about the fact that the consistoire wants to abolish the gezeira of kitnias. In other words, they decided that it's time to abolish that gezeira. And the Chasam Sofer writes how it's not negotiable. You can't be mevatel such a gezeira. But this is a direct fallout from Napoleon. Now, the Chasam Sofer himself lived at the same time as Napoleon. And there's another tshuva in Chasam Sofer, where the Chasam Sofer writes about a shaila, if you're allowed to rebuild the city on Shabbos through Goyim, Bekablonus, because he writes, and this is a very typical tshuva, where you can see history in a tshuva. The Chasam Sofer didn't have to write the details. He could have just had a shaila. Are you allowed to rebuild the city on Shabbos with Goyim when it was destroyed? You don't have to know how it was destroyed, who destroyed it, but the Chasam Sofer decided to write in 1809 in the city of Pressburg. There were Napoleon came and he battered the city with his cannons and literally bombed up the whole city, and Yidden don't have where to live, and it's mamash hamatzav of pikuach nefesh. Are you allowed to build with Goyim befarhesia bekablonus? And this Chasam Sofer is a very, very important tshuva in these halachas. If the Olam remembers, a few months ago when we spoke about building shuls, this Chasam Sofer we spoke about, because that Chasam Sofer speaks about whether you're allowed to build public things that are negated to the public on Shabbos, even with kablonas, because of Maris Ayin and so on. But there the Chasam Sofer brings the history, and what happened was that in one of Napoleon's many wars that he waged, he went against Austria, he went against Germany, he went, all the European countries were affected, or many, many of them were affected. And at that time, there was a bastion or a stronghold of Austrian soldiers in Pressburg. Even today, if you go, as soon as you come into Bratislava, you see how the old city is fortified. It was a big, big wall, probably 20 or 30 meters high, mamash, a very high wall, and you come into the city from the bridge, you mamash have a direct you can, you know, it's mamash standing in your face. So Napoleon, that's where they had the soldiers, so he battered it and he destroyed it. And that was the foundation to the Yiddish area. And it was a mamash matzav of pikuach nefesh, because the entire area was about to collapse and fall apart because of all those bombings. So again, this is a tshuva chasam sofer in Arachaim, which we put in. We also put in a hakdoma from the Chaya Odom. Now we have to understand that Napoleon, he went far and wide. He was in Warsaw. He was the one who sort of changed the history in Poland. Even today, you go to Warsaw, there's a statue of him there, because they also celebrate the fact what he did. There are many, many things, which we're going to speak about later, what Napoleon accomplished. Many of the things that we know, and many of the oifen of government, how it's set up, is all thanks to Napoleon. He basically, in the 20 years that he reigned and that he was around, he changed the face of society and the face of what we know, the way we know it, very quickly. In other words, history sometimes goes at a slow pace, and sometimes it goes at fast forward, and sometimes you do times two or times four. This was probably times 32 or times 64. And literally in a very, very short time, you came out of the dark ages sort of into almost a modern world, sort of. And this is all thanks to Napoleon. So he was also in Lithuania, Vilna. And the Chaya Odom writes how a soldier stole his manuscript. He had a ksaviad of the Chaya Odom, and somehow a soldier stole it. So he went with his heart pounding to the lager, he calls it, which is the camp, to the camp where the soldiers were, and he went to speak to the commander that he wants back his thing. And he writes how Mamshi had sat at the Shmaya. As he came, this Ganev approached him and gave it back to him. But this is printed in the Hakdom of the Chaya Odom, so I put it in there. Then I put it in the Rambam, in Hilchas Sanhedrin, where you see what the halacha would be if there is such a thing as a Sanhedrin today. And Bepashtus, in Chutz Lord, there's no din of Sanhedrin, and you need Musmachim. And those Rabbonim, most of the 71, were, as we said, they barely knew how to read Ivra. Then we put in the Hakdoma of the Sefer Yad David. This is of Rav Zinsheim. And Rav Zinsheim, as we said, the Chasam Sofer writes about him, Mamash, you know, he was from the Gedoyla Hador, a huge Talmud Chacham, a huge Marbetz Torah, and the Loshen that they use on the Reb David Zinsheim is Nechnes B'Sholem V'Yotze B'Sholem, which is an expression the Gemara uses about Acher and others that went up to the, you know, up in Shemayim where you're not supposed to go. And Reb Akiva was the one who's Nechnes B'Sholem V'Yotze B'Sholem. Everyone else was affected. So here, this is the Loshen that they use, that he, even though he was in a situation where no Rav should ever want to find himself, because your mamash between a rock and a hard place, whatever you say, you're doomed. As you can look at the 12 questions, but he, Lamaisa, navigated it very professionally, and he came out, as they said, with flying colors. Now, the unfortunate saga about this Rav David Zinsheim is that he's buried in a Goyish Beis HaChaim. He, in France, he's buried in a Goyish Beis HaChaim because, as we said, the consistoire, which was the government, they were the ones who decided where he's going to be buried because of his major position and his stance that they, you know, the way they held him in highest regard. So they buried him in a Jewish section of a Goyish Beis HaChaim. And for many years, there were many askonim that tried to move him out. But ad hayom, they're not maskim. By the way, there is a concept, I'm not sure in England, but in America, one of the constitutional rights is that you separate church and religion. And that was something which was a big problem. I'm not sure in England that they have that, but in France, for sure not. And that is why in America, the founding fathers, they were very upset about that concept. And this is mamash what the consistoire was, and this is all part of what he did. Now, we have a few other Maromakoymas, which we'll speak about later. There was a very, very big debate, this whole Indian of Napoleon was played itself out in Russia. That's where a major part of it happened, because his downfall was, his first downfall was in Russia. That's where he had to retreat. He came running all the way back. And in Russia, there were big tzaddikim, the Balatanya, Remendel Meremenev, and many others who were very involved, and there was a very, very big debate between the tzaddikim, should he win, should he not win, as you can see in the, we put in from Remendel Meremenev, we put in. Then we also put in from the Alter Rebbe, thanks to Rabbi Rodl, he showed me those Mara Mekoymas, because I wanted to find it from holy sources. In other words, unholy sources you have all over, but I wanted to find from holy sources, so he directed me in a sefer that brings the toldos from the Alter Rebbe, and I put in a few pages of it where you can see the flavor, how the tzaddikim felt about it. The Baal HaTanya was very against Napoleon, and he held that it would be a disaster if he wins the war in Russia. And Napoleon knew about it, and he wanted to catch him. He wanted to capture him, and the Baal HaTanya ran away, and you know he passed away before he was able to capture him. But this played a very important role between the tzaddikim. There was a certain Rosh Hashanah where everyone knew that this Rosh Hashanah is going to be the deciding factor, and some of the tzaddikim woke up early and they davened mamash by the nets, and they blew shofar before anyone could even think that they would do it, and that is when they said that was the turning point, and that's when he started losing. And we will learn, we will speak about what the lesson is, why he lost. I'm saying apiderech hateva, which is also something that we can learn from. Then, finally, if you look at the very back, the last few pages, that is all about those 12 questions, which are fascinating, and to see the answers, which, this is not something that you'll find all over, but I found it, as I said, in one of the koftsim that they find all these different kizvayodas. So I will let the oilam look a bit and learn a bit, and then we'll come back a bit later and given the second part of the shiur on many different things that we can learn from this whole saga of Napoleon. Thank you.